Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did we used to clap?
Did we clap? I don't know.
I feel like we clapped.
Maybe we did clap.
Well, I think we did clap.
We've just gotten so much better at it.
Oh, no, we can't. What a dream.
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour. I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Tommy. And this is the only musical theater podcast with codas.
And sodas. Such a simple one, by the way.
It's good. I love it. How we missed that one.
Exactly. Here we take apart your favorite shows, muddle them together with a shot of buffoonery, and pour you a refreshing glass of musical theater conversation. Tommy, what are you drinking today?
It's a glass of water that I had 2 years ago that I'm drinking in exactly the same manner, with the same number of ice cubes attempting to make. Here, can you? I'm replicating the drinking of the water and making it sound of exactly how I drank it.
I mean, to be honest, I was like, I have no idea what you possibly do other than like a really British drink.
Well, aren't they the Starbucks girls in that one? I guess I could have said Starbucks.
I mean, you could, but come on.
I know, it's not, it wasn't as good as my joke.
Starbucks for this show. I wouldn't believe it. Tommy, why? What are we talking about?
Well, I've got a quiz question for you. Ooh. This movie adaptation of this musical starred Academy Award winner Olivia Colman and Academy Award nominee Tom Hardy. What show?
I feel like that didn't make sense.
No, it didn't.
I'm sure it made sense somewhere, because some people got it correct, because it is London Road.
The manhunt for the multiple murderer enters a new phase. The feelings of vulnerability are certainly not helped by the knowledge that whoever carried out this murdering spree is still free to attack again. This huge investigation has had a profound impact. Experts say it could haunt this place with traditionally low levels of crime for a long time.
Simon, what atmospheric? Well, what's the atmosphere like there right now?
Well, I think there's generally a sense of disbelief across this town and also a great sense of sadness. As you know, I've lived in this town for several years and there is an eerie air hanging over it. Though this town itself will bounce back, it can only do that. And when this killer is caught, and today the answer to that may well lie in it for yourself. Back to you.
Police stop and question drivers in the red light district. Officers still trying to trace the last movements of the five murdered prostitutes. There are now more than 350 police officers from 31 forces as far afield as Northern Ireland working on this case.
Experts say it could haunt this place with traditionally low levels of crime for a long time.
There are now more than
300. So we have more than one method of killing a friend of the question.
Ipswich Ripper, the so-called Ipswich Ripper.
Ipswich Ripper.
Yeah, London Road. I can't describe how much I have wanted to talk about this show.
Jimmy's been trying to get me to do the show for, for a couple of years now.
A couple of years, yep. I'm very excited to talk about it. I am. And I am very excited to, I don't know, I kind of hope, like, bring it to a lot of people who probably haven't listened to it. And I'm going to encourage you right now.
Yeah, go listen to it.
Go listen to it. It's really important that you do, because it's a bit of a different one.
That's putting it mildly.
Right? So, London Road. Music and lyrics by Mr. Adam Cork. Book and, I guess, lyrics by Alecky Blythe.
Yep, it's a real life retelling centered around the murders in Ipswich and the eventual trial of Stephen Wright in 2006.
Mm-hmm. And it opened up in the National Theatre in London in 2011, and did very, very well. And then there was a very successful, well, I say very successful in the small scale BFI
very
world.
Successful in, it was successful in there on Jimmy's DVD player.
Yeah, oh, hugely. Yes, there was a film starring none other than Olivia Colman, Tom Hardy, which I'll put in a vertical.
Yeah, because
starring
is really, like,
he's there. And much of the cast from the original production And that was made in 2015. And that's The Life of London Road.
Yeah, it's good. The movie's fantastic.
Oh, yes. So what is it? Well. So London Road, the actual play, is looking at the lives of the people who lived on London Road, who were part of the Neighbourhood Watch there, which was formed out of the press debacle, the outcry of the five murders by Stephen Wright in 2006 in Ipswich in Suffolk.
But the fascinating thing about this show is that it is a piece of verbatim theatre. And so unlike maybe any other musical you've ever listened to before, all the words in this show were said by real people and are reproduced as exactly as they can be based on recordings of the people saying the words about the thing.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's they kind of marked it as it's their words exactly as they said it. And certainly, you know, the book parts, that is exactly how it's done. But for the first time, I guess, they've really tried to musicalize it.
Yeah, which is fascinating.
The things that they said and have created.
But it is, you know, it's a story of a small community beset upon by first these terrible murders and then the media storm following it and kind of their journey through first the fear and stress around that and then the recovery of this community, of this London Road.
Yep. It's got a rich, rich history, Tommy. Shall we dive straight on in? I just want to talk.
Sploosh.
Obviously, a lot of people going out for the weekend.
We're going to be a bit worried.
So we're handing out personal alarms to...
I've saw ladies out shopping today.
So that's why we're here.
Everyone is very, very.
Come on for my daughter, please.
Yes, certainly. Of course you can.
Obviously a lot of people going out for the weekend. We're going to be a bit worried. So I'm there handing out personal alarms to I just saw the ladies out shopping today. So that's why they're here.
Verbatim theatre. Now, first point of order.
Yeah.
You call it documentary theater.
Verbatim theater is a term I never would have used before this piece. Perhaps the more Americanized term would be documentary theater. I don't know if there are enough in the American canon for this to be a recognizable term to, you know, a lot of theater majors and stuff. The most accessible one, I think, to American audiences at least, is the Laramie Project.
Yeah,
is a huge piece of verbatim theater. And it is, I don't know, is it, how much verbatim theater is there in the UK? I don't know if I've ever seen a piece in real life other than Laramie Project.
I haven't either, but there is more. and it's mostly Alecky Blythe.
Sure.
There's a few kind of, I guess, pioneers of it.
Sure.
Obviously, it's been around for a long time, and Alecky Blythe had her own mentors.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few sort of big name verbatim theatre authors who have their own quite distinct styles, mm-hmm. and sort of preferences.
Yeah.
Because obviously it is a genre. It's theatre. There's no rules attached to it. You
right.
don't need to do it. But the basic principle of going into a community or a population or whatever, gathering interviews and using their words to build your story.
Yeah.
That principle is reasonably popular over here.
Yeah.
I think another big one that other people might know, was it called Just 8 or was it Prop 8, the one about Prop 8?
Oh yeah. Yep. I remember when that happened vaguely.
I think it might have just been called 8.
But I do, was that one, so this is a question I had about verbatim theater and why I think the terms verbatim theater and documentary theater are a little incongruous. Mm-hmm. And the canon of these works isn't big enough to even start to draw some of these distinctions because it is only a dozen people. But documentary theater has a connotation, to me at least, about a thing already happened and you pull primary sources and recreate them on stage. Whereas verbatim theater, there's another kind of theater trend in America called story theater, which is kind of similar in that, like, you are taking the act of creating the theater, the piece itself is a part of the process, that you go and retrieve these recordings and the interviews partially with the intent of potentially turning them into a piece, which is right. So you know, it's a discussion of quantum physics almost. Verbatim theater is a part of itself, where documentary theater looks on a thing that happened. Like, you could argue, perhaps in a more dramatized sense, that The Crucible is kind of documentary theater, as an example. Maybe not a great one. But, like, you're looking at events and then dramatizing them or taking it in, perhaps with original text, perhaps not. Where verbatim theater has such a focus on exactly recreating. Because Laramie Project doesn't go to the great lengths of, like, recreating the original cadences of the people who talked about the thing, you know, where verbatim theater, like, goes all in on, like, this is, you know, it is super Brechtian that way too.
Yeah, very much so. And I think we'll probably talk a wee bit about that when we get into the actual show. That's fair. I think, I'm sure it was definitely just the script was built around the trial notes and I might be getting that completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was. But yes, this was, you know, Alecky Blythe went out with her recorder into this community with the purpose of one day using it, you know, using these conversations to become a piece of verbatim theater.
Yeah, and the recordings themselves are represented throughout the piece as well. Like they play the recordings. The terminology around this gets a little difficult because... Are you taught, because it is such a recreation when the actor person says it out loud, pretending to be the person, but also you play the audio that the real person said.
The original interview. I'll talk a little bit about Alecky Blythe and kind of her sort of history with verbatim theatre, because she was quite well known in her early days for being one of the ones that's very much a stickler to the rules. And she wanted every single every single stutter, mispronounced word, everything to be there. She wanted it to be as authentic as possible. And she was one of the big sort of chiefs of having the actors not learn the lines. So the actors would be played via headsets, the speech as they heard it, and they would repeat it 2 seconds behind, in the cadence, all of the ums, all of the ers, exactly as it said. So the actors never got a script. They were just had these recordings and rehearse with them, and sort of bring the character out through that way. But then, kind of as time went on, and as she adapted her style, even sort of through past London Road and into things she's done since, she's moved away from the headset idea. Just because she found it was limiting in the sense of you've got your actors wearing a headset.
From a theatrical standpoint,
exactly. And kind of allows our actors now to take a little bit more license. She's still very much focused on keeping the authenticity of the text and the original source material.
Yeah.
But the actual system in which it's delivered, she's kind of changed. And I think London Road and her whole process for creating that was a big part of that and a big part of her changing her style.
Sure. I do find it fascinating. You get, like, verbatim theater started around the mid-70s, the earliest versions of it, and this is the time in theater, like, this is the weird theater history time. This is when Beckett was really popular and people were doing a lot of really experimental, you know, weird shit. And I do think, I find it interesting because this is also weird on the grand scheme of theatrical things, but verbatim theater and Alecky's style, I would say, is surprisingly accessible for how weird it is.
Yeah.
And, like, in a way that the weirdness, in a way that it can surpass its own weirdness to then let a, you know, average Joe audience back into the story. Whereas something like Blue Man Group capitalizes on its weirdness as an aspect of the thing.
Yeah.
you know, London Road is weird for 5 minutes and then you get it.
I would completely agree. And yeah, I think I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah.
By how unweird I find, because you know me, I love a bit of weird,
right?
And I'm quite open-minded to that. But this is really weird. Like, this is really weird.
Yeah.
This is totally, is that thing. It's like, you wouldn't have heard anything like this before.
No.
To this extent. So how do you process, like, how do you come in and appreciate something like that?
Right.
And it is, it's strange because with something that's so new like this,
mm-hmm.
it feels like they've got it so right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like a diamond that needs to still be polished and it's like, oh my God, keep running with this idea. You could do so much. It feels like it is done.
Yeah. I do wonder, and maybe we'll talk about this more when we talk about the story. Like, I think one of the difficulties with verbatim theater is you are, you know, you're an artist in search of a story, and there's a trap built into that, which I'm curious about, you know, because I don't have the UK perspective on the Ipswich murders either and this trial. And so, like, I have a question about the sensationalism around it and that kind of quantum nature of searching for a story. Certainly you haven't, you know, you don't have the same sort of knobs you can turn to dramatize a story because you're sticking exactly to the words people said. And so then I'm curious about the rest of the process surrounding that.
Yeah.
You know, honestly curious, not in an accusatory, like, what have they, you know, what are they lying about?
How do they? And it is hugely fascinating. So there's a couple of really good books that I've read on just verbatim theatre.
Uh-huh.
And it's, I think they kind of take like 3 or 4 authors, okay. sort of case studies and how they do it differently. And I'll link them in the show notes and I will say, do your own personal copy. Because it is really interesting. And kind of the answer is, who knows? Like,
right.
Because it still feels very much, like I say, the rules are unwritten.
Yeah.
How you do this, the best way to do this is still to be determined.
Right.
And even, I just find it really interesting that even something as niche as verbatim theatre has all of this discrepancy within it and
sure.
all of these different approaches.
Yeah.
I just think that's utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we will definitely talk in a bit about the sort of, like you say, the sensationalizing.
Yeah.
But to jump on that idea of like going in search for a story.
Sure.
I know that when London Road, the kind of the seed of the idea was first created, I think had like 5 or 6 different archives of material or ideas up her sleeve.
Yeah.
And she didn't go with London Road as
right.
this is my thing, like this is gonna be amazing, I want to make a musical out of this.
Yeah.
It was just complete happenstance, and that's what I absolutely love about this is
something
that's so new and groundbreaking was never meant to happen,
right?
You know what I mean? She was at I think it was like a symposium or something like that with composers and writers brought together to like
some kind of artist collective
new things. And she found Adam Cork, and together they kind of realized that actually these recordings from this community during the murders, and I think this was early on, so I don't think he had gone to trial even yet.
The forward of the script mentions that then she goes back to do more interviews and live, basically.
She absolutely does. And finds this whole other story about this community there.
Yeah.
And how they've changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that, because that is proper fate stuff we're talking here. That,
right.
You know, Adam Cork was so up for taking on this huge challenge. Like, he's literally done something that hasn't been done before. And to have the confidence in the chutzpah to be like,
right,
yeah, okay, let's do it
in a way that was so popularly successful. I mean, you know, not clearly not enough to make it into everyone's psyche, but this, you know, wasn't a sleeper weird piece of
not at all.
Bespoke art. Like, this was,
and to be honest, like, I would say most of the negative reviews about it don't say that it doesn't work.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean? I've yet to really see someone be like, do you know what? This is a concept. Like, people obviously aren't a fan.
Right.
That's fine. But I think all of them say that it works.
Yeah.
That the way that they've gone about it
yeah.
absolutely makes sense. And that it is the only way that you could do it.
Yeah.
They just might not be into the music or right. the content. You know, like, that's, they have issues as if it was just any other show.
Right.
And I adore that. I think that is so brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I think musical theatre in the verbatim world,
uh-huh.
we have had some, what's that word I'm looking for? Eclipsing.
Sure. Yes.
Of that Venn diagram. Kind of as far back, like I said, in the 70s as a chorus line.
Mm-hmm.
So a chorus line was formed with Michael Bennett going to his gypsy friends mm-hmm. and being like, do tell me about your dancing career, tell me about your lives and your stories. And they recorded all of it.
Yeah.
And then he took from that and took certain, some of their words and worked with mm-hmm. the writers to turn it into a show that is a really incredible show.
Right.
And also, like, there are some verbatim elements in there, like there are stutters and there are some erms and mm-hmm. weird cutoffs and things like that that
yeah.
he's kept.
Yeah.
But certainly Marvin Hamlish
mm-hmm.
didn't go through the cadence of each of the sentences
right. and had, yeah.
By Bjork Lee to be like, okay, let's see what she's saying right. here, this is, and I'm going to create
this
a song.
This measures in 5/4, and this measures in 4/4, and this measures in 2/4. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. There was none of that. Marvin Hamlish just had a lovely old time of just writing some nice songs. And I think that's where London Road sits as the
yeah.
the tide changer. You sure. know what I mean? That's this well, is...
And you do see this kind of pendulum swing in the whole theater compendium, from, you know, realism to naturalism to impressionism, and like, how, you know, are you looking, are you what's the level of verisimilitude you're yeah. supposed to be perceiving on stage? Is this supposed to be perceived as a real story, or some kind of romanticized interpretation of a real story, or something that you interpret as being entirely fake? Yeah. And so it's interesting, verbatim seems to, like, you know, the pendulum swings just a little further than maybe it ever had in that direction before.
Oh, massive. I think it smashed through a little pane of glass. Like, something went really wrong.
Sure.
Well, didn't it? So it went very right. It smashed into a pane of glass. And I don't know. But yeah, and I think more recently, we have to acknowledge Come From Away.
Of course.
Because it was kind of done in a similar-ish
yeah.
Style. I would say closer to what the way a chorus line did it,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to how Adam Cork has done it.
Yeah.
But again, those writers went to Gander,
yeah.
Spoke to everyone,
right.
And got their stories.
And both Come From Away and London Road are about a thing, an event, a happening. Whereas
yes.
a chorus line, that happening is invented, the audition, to pull the
yes.
whole thing together. I just find that, yeah, I find it fascinating. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around a particular, like, human fascination with the replication of life on stage, I
yeah.
guess. And maybe that is theater, you know, maybe that I'm just, you know, struggling with that spark of theater. But, like,
right.
eventually there's some threshold at which it's just boring. You don't want to watch exact real life on stage, right? I mean, maybe
but
you
then
do.
The question is maybe you do, because, right, so we have this TV show
uh-huh.
in the UK. I don't know if you have an equivalent,
uh-huh.
But it's called Gogglebox.
Okay.
Do you know?
No, I know nothing about this.
So Gogglebox is the precipice of the 21st century, because
uh-huh.
Gogglebox is a TV show where a bunch of families are watching TV.
Oh, fascinating.
And talking about it.
Okay.
As it happens.
Yeah.
And it's not like... it's not like a Fine Brothers React video where
they'll
sure. watch it and then they'll get some questions about it.
Yeah.
They're literally just sat watching it and
it's
talking.
It's a video game Let's Play, but for television.
100%.
Got
you're
it.
Watching people watch television.
That's fascinating.
So,
yeah.
Like that, and it's huge.
Yeah.
People adore it because it's so human. I think
right.
that's the thing, is like the key to all of these stories and the key to why they're all, because let's face it, A Chorus Line and Come From Away are universally loved.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? because they're so honest.
Yeah.
So I've got your next one, guys.
London Road. One exactly.
That you're going to universally love.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's it. It's just that it's the humanity that exists within them.
Sure.
You're not creating relatability. The relatability is just right there for you to, to enjoy.
I would revise your sentence. You create the relatability by the choice of the thing, as opposed to the writing of the script.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the creation point moves a little bit, which is just, that's interesting to me. In
yeah.
A way that it's hard
because
to
I imagine that there are plenty of, you know, someone could be like, I think this would make a great verbatim piece. I'm going to go out and look at that. And it probably just wouldn't work because of whatever reason. But I think, yeah, the kind of key thing, the key thread taking all these through is this idea of coming together. Like, it's weird, the idea of coming together and showing the kind of life will out humanity of it. And I think that's quite cool.
It is cool.
It's just a really cool thing.
I do. The weasel question I'm about to ask, I know it's a weasel question. Is it a musical?
Yes.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, I'm going to weasel question right back at you with my stupid insult. What is a musical?
I know. Well, and that's, you know, it's begging the question. But it
because this has, you know, I mean, if you looked at it, if this was being created, right? If you were like, or, you know, these Ipswich murders happened, I'm going to write a musical about it, as if you would ever have those thoughts. But for some reason, you're like, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
If you were song spotting that event, I think you would come up with most of these
numbers. Fair.
Or certainly a lot of the non-community ones.
Yeah, right? You would get those ideas.
Absolutely. These songs exist as standalone songs.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of National Theatre play with the music.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? The songs aren't, what's the word? Bird. What is the word? You know what? Diegetic.
Diegetic.
Thank you. These songs are not diegetic.
Right.
These are very much numbers.
Yeah.
You know? And I think going into the National Theatre and sitting down and watching it, you would relate to it as a musical.
Sure. And I think that's true. And it lives in the ecosystem of musicals. And I think, honestly, one of the most defining factors of what a musical is if a piece calls itself a musical, which this one does.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do, it you know, quote unquote, breaks so many of the rules. Like, there is, you know, one of the tried and true truisms of musical theatre is, You act until you can't take it, and then you start singing, and then you sing till you can't take it, and then you start dancing. And this show doesn't follow that at all.
It doesn't. No, not at all. It's sort of like, I don't even know how the song spotted it, that you live until you can't live any harder. And
you
have to sing it. So.
Yeah.
It's true. Because, and I think when we get to talk about the content a bit more as well, characters in this show is a very loose term.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you any of their names.
Right. They have names and they have identifiable characters, but there's no, you're not on anyone's journey with them.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a huge part of the actual book. It's all multi-roled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a relatively small cast with a character roster of 40 people. Shaka Rooney, very like Come From Away.
Right.
You know what I mean? Obviously, Come From Away's characters are a lot more.
Right. And you're still
out.
Kind of following their through lines. But this one, it's, you know, talking heads.
And so that would be my only tiny little argument for it being something else.
Sure.
But I still think it's a musical.
Yeah, I think I agree. It is just an interesting, you know, thought experiment.
Because it's so bloody different.
Because it's so different. And you wonder, you know, how these things begin. Like, when does a genre, you know, mitosis away from its predecessor to become a new thing? Verbatim theater certainly isn't there yet.
Yeah.
But this could be the seed of something like that. If
absolutely,
I think the caveat is I don't think verbatim theater would ever become that popular. I don't think there's enough good content to sustain that sort of
not at all
piece.
It's so much work.
It's so much work. Yeah.
Like, I think that's it. Is, you know, my first question after seeing this was like, why isn't this the new thing? Like, right. Why haven't we seen at least 20 more of these?
Yeah.
Because it was this happenstance. Do you know what I mean? It was just so just so happened that we had an expert in verbatim theater.
Yeah.
Willing and ready.
Yeah.
To open her mind and do a bit of musical theater.
Right. Well, and it does. I was thinking about cellular material.
Which is where are you now?
as I do. Can we just say sperm?
Yep.
And I think this is part of the thing that makes it accessible. I think this is also the thing that is why it's better as a musical than just a piece of verbatim straight theater. Mm-hmm. Is because they're able to take a lot of these tropes or speech patterns centered around news reporting and interviewing that become very easily musicalized. Cellular material is the easiest one to demonstrate because he's doing several takes of the same thing. Yes. And because the way they musicalized a lot of these pieces was through repetition. Most of the time, the repetition doesn't make sense in a story standpoint. It's just to make the music a little more interesting. And it certainly does. And then, you know, it feeds back on itself and makes the text more interesting, hearing it recontextualized either through different characters or in different music. But because of that very particular... It's why I think cellular material is one of the most brilliant pieces in the show. It's also why I'm really happy, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the film, but that they rearranged the film to start with news reports.
Right.
Because...
Yeah, we will definitely talk about that.
There is this thing about... intended repetition and building that repetition into your plot a little bit that then forgives the accidental repetition before and after it.
Yeah. Well, I think it just works. Like, I think it just makes a lot of sense. And I think it just, because all of the, and there is a lot of repetition within it, whether it's like a hook or whether it's like, it just feels like a chorus.
Yeah.
There is a lot of it, but really it kind of does that sort of very historical theater moment of hammering home a point.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I will repeat something at you because this is my message.
But it does it so much better than like a Cole Porter or something. Not in that sort of catchy tune, you're hearing the chorus again so that you can hear the chorus again. In this one, you automatically think it could be him or him or him, and that's the plot. But then they use it like it's the same thing.
They don't say, you know what I mean? They don't say anything different. But whether it's adding more voices or whether it's, you know, changing up the harmony in this line and this repetition, it feels like a new idea.
Yeah.
Just the whole concept of, it doesn't matter whose words they are.
Right.
They're everyone's words.
Yeah.
Like, that's a genius thing because... Yeah. That, therefore, gives you community straight away. Everyone is having these same thoughts and you're on that ride with everyone. It doesn't matter who says it.
Yeah.
Because this is the feeling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That is, it's bloody genius.
It is cool. It is, yeah. I did briefly want to talk about, have you heard about Charles Cornell?
I have. I can sing you one if you want.
Which one's your favorite? I really like his Blow the Coronavirus Away one.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's very funny. It's some televangelist who's like, COVID-19, I blow you away. The winds of God.
Brilliant.
It's delightful. Charles Cornell is a internet pianist.
Yeah. The one that I love the most is the one that made him go viral, which is Cardi B.
Yes.
And her, none of you bitches. It's again, it's exactly everything that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's all scored.
Yeah. He takes, you know, viral videos, TikToks, and what would have been Vines if Vines still existed, and adds music to them, but in a very particular way that keeps the video and the text of it literally as much as it the same as it could be.
Yeah.
It's a cool skill to have.
You've also written as well the Gregory Brothers.
Oh, yes, Auto-Tune the News, which is a huge throwback.
Huge, I know, which is really upsetting. Like, Auto-Tune the News is like my early days YouTube binging.
Yeah.
So good, though.
So good. And there's a lot of I was rewatching the movie, and the intro bit with the newscasters, there's a couple where they did just auto-tune them. They're not singing, but they just pitched their voices just a little bit, because they're playing with, like, are they singing? Aren't they singing? We're just going to make you think they're singing a little bit. And it just, it gave me an auto-tune the news flashback. But it is, totally. You know, it's these weird corners of, like, you know, whatever the human satisfaction center is, that, like, we find these things entertaining, but it's a little difficult to articulate why.
Massively. Massively. It is. It's so, it's, again, it's so satisfying, because this is an activity that anyone could do.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You could auto-tune our podcast. You could musicalize any of our podcast episodes.
Yeah.
And it would be something.
It would be something. I mean? But it would be entertaining.
Still do it. It's still an activity that you could do. Yeah. And I think that's that kind of innate musicality. And yeah, when we got on to talk about the film and the opening of the film, I think it was extremely...
It was very clever.
Smart.
Yeah.
Very clever.
I want to get myself clean. If I could do anything, you know, like get myself clean for them almost. Do you know what I mean?
Getting myself clean.
There's been help given us, yeah. There's girls that in took it. And there's the girls that took it. And the girls that took it, a lot of them are doing really well.
A
year later now, and yeah, we're going about 3 times. And what with other organisations and stuff, you know, there has been a help there, you know.
We've all stopped now.
And it has been because of the murders that
and
we've
it has,
all stopped.
Yeah, that's why, like, we've all stopped.
I've got Well saying that I got regulars.
We got regulars.
That phone and we see, you know, won't work the street, but we got a few regulars that'll keep us going.
You know, won't work the street, but we got a few regulars that'll keep us going.
Just do, like, instead of hundreds of pounds worth of drugs a day now, all I do is like £15 worth of drugs a day now, if that.
I don't use it every day anymore, maybe occasionally now I'm still trying to get over that hurdle, but
it's just that last little bit. You gotta get off. Yeah.
A year ago, like, there is such a change. I never thought I'd get back to where I am now. I really didn't.
Like, I've never been this big before, either. I was like a size fucking 6.
No, I put on weight. I was like a size 6.
Yeah, we wasn't. It took all that for anyone to start helping us.
Yeah, that's what's upsetting.
Yeah, that's what's upsetting. Yeah, that's what's upsetting.
Yeah.
Took those tough 5 girls. That's what makes me feel I want to get clean for them, because it took their lives.
It took their lives for them to help us.
Come on, let's get these girls off the street. Come on,
let's get these girls off the street.
Jimmy, tell me about the Ipswich Ripper, and then maybe I'll tell you about O.J. Simpson.
Okay. So I was young. No, I probably wasn't that young. 16 when this was all happening.
Yeah.
And I remember it happening, but I wasn't a big newsboy.
Sure.
And also not English.
Right.
And that is a bit different. But yeah. I mean, we don't often get serial killers in the UK.
Sure.
So it was definitely notable.
Yeah.
So I do remember it happening. But to the extent at which it is discussed in London Road, not at all. And I'm quite grateful to London Road, because I now know a lot about this crime.
Yeah.
Purely because of this.
Yeah. Well, I am interested, because, like, I think this is a UK-US difference. Mm-hmm. Not that the United States has tons of serial killers, but there is a sensationalism around it. And, like, I'm curious about the landscape of news sensationalism, where you are and where I am. Like, do they televise car chases in the UK? Do they have car chases?
We can't. It's really hard for us to have car chases just because we don't have these mad extensive freeways.
Sure.
Like, we've got motorways, but there's always congestion. So good luck to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, we have local, they're, you know, all the time through the streets of California or something, someone steals a van and drives around, you know, terrorizing the local suburb, and it'll be on CNN, and then, you know, 10 years later, they'll make a compilation of all of them to air on a different channel, like, oh, then the perpetrator, you know, took a hard left here, watch this cop car, and like, I get the sense, which is perhaps true, that that is a uniquely United States thing.
It's, I mean, like, it does happen, like, we do, obviously, we've got, you know, reality TV crime shows where you've got the dashboard cam and you're following them around, but it's not to the like you say, the OJ Simpson high stakes,
right?
Everyone is gripped at their TV watching this.
Exactly. No. Well, and OJ Simpson is actually technically a little before my time, but it, you know who OJ Simpson is and are aware of the sensational trial, which is a wild thing, and like the this musical touches on this phenomenon of like sensationalizing a piece, and does play a very tricky line where I guess the question I have is like, was, you know, Stephen Wright's trial and these serial killings over sensationalized for its time or appropriately sensationalized?
I mean, obviously, I wish I could remember, and I wish I could, you know, but I think the fact that I'm not as hugely aware about it probably means that it wasn't over-sensationalized.
Right.
And I think that, even though it was only, what, 14 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, 2006. Like, that was a very different time.
Right.
News-wise, and how we digest news and how we talk about news.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a difference in time. I think if it happened now, it'd be a completely different thing.
Fascinating.
It absolutely would be sensationalized. Yes. Yeah. But I think at the time, it was reported on as any other news story would have been.
Yeah.
Definitely voraciously, because it was huge news.
Right.
But not to the extent where, you know, it would be getting memed about.
Right. Well, because it is a lot of the you know, the community sentiment that they follow is that these people who live on London Road, not that they're being terrorized by the news, but they're kind of sick of it. Which is fascinating to me, which would lead me to believe that at least to some people it was more than it needed to be.
Well, I think It's interesting, like the actual play talks about this that the film doesn't.
Okay.
They've got a number basically about this idea. Mm-hmm. It's called They Like a Good Moan. It's so good. It's so bloody British.
Yes, yes, yes.
And there's like tiny snippets of the interview dialogue worked into the film, but not as a number.
Yeah.
And basically it's two members of the press talking about how they love to moan about us. They say that they hate us being here, but they all still watch the news and buy the papers.
Right.
And they've kind of got a point. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is, it's like you can moan and hate, but if we weren't here, you would be missing it. Do you know what I mean? You still consume what we do.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's a really good, just interesting discussion
number. Yeah.
Where it's like, media.
Yeah.
Right. It has to be there.
Well, I mean, we've decided that it has to be there. It's such a fascinating... I find discussions of contemporary news so fascinating because it's an accident. You know, you used to need the newspaper because how else did you know what was happening anywhere? Or, like, with the war, whichever one it was, right?
Right, uh-huh.
You want to know. Now, people watch Gogglebox, right? So
right, exactly. Well, I'm just like, do you want the news? Okay, let me go on Twitter. This is literally, it's happened 5 seconds ago and I can tell you everything about it. Like,
exactly. You know, and then it is a question of like, what is newsworthy? Well, anything can be. And so then what is more newsworthy? Probably a serial killer, but maybe not to the point. Yeah. News ethics, I always find fascinating, especially
in
today's day and age.
Yeah, massively. And I think, again, like, to give London Road its plaudits, like, because it was a news story, like, it is...
Yeah.
That isn't what the play is about.
Right.
But at the center of it is a news story.
Yeah.
And the characters in the show rely on the news.
Yeah.
And watch the news as part of it. I think it is just a really interesting documentation of that and how things are reported and how we consume.
Right. Yeah.
That.
I did. So also on the difference between the United States and the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
What's a personal alarm? I can make an assumption, but
that would be a rape alarm.
Okay. But like it's electronic and you like pull a button and it's like, woo, woo, woo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's fascinating. If this were America, they'd be handing out pepper spray.
Yes.
And like defensive things, you know, cause we got our guns.
Of course.
It's just an interesting, you know, I find the difference between the handling of crime in the UK and the US in subtle ways, enlightening.
Yeah. It's very British. Even the fact that we call them personal alarms.
Right. I know. It's so...
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a rape whistle. It's a personal alarm.
Right. It's like going to the washroom. Like...
Yeah.
You know, it's the toilet.
Yeah, it's very British.
Yeah. When it is, like, I have all these questions. Like, do you have Stranger Danger? Will you ever talk about Stranger Danger?
Yes, we are, but not... Again, it's not, like, hammered... I mean, I don't know if it's hammered home for you guys, but it's not hammered home for us, but we're taught, yeah, don't go into...
Right.
You know, if, you know, strangers with candy, like, that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. But, it, like...
I haven't been at school in a long time, so maybe nowadays that's it might
fair.
Be different.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I'm just so curious about how the public perception of crime and law enforcement and crime investigation, you know, I think sometimes we have these assumptions that, and certainly the the dialogue on American cops is deep and wide and not something I want to get too muddy into, mm-hmm. but... We have these assumptions that police are police, but I think, you know, the difference between a bobby and a cop is quite different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a white male, so I've got no idea.
Fair. Yeah.
About if it's any different over here.
Yeah.
The idea would be that it is.
Yeah.
But I'm not the person to say, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But we have a really good TV show called Line of Duty.
Yeah.
Which is really, honestly, an incredible piece of TV. And that goes into our corrupt police.
Fascinating.
And the corruption of it. It's not reality, it is
right.
fiction.
It's fiction.
But I'm sure it's quite realistic in some ways.
We have cops where they just run around chasing the cops. Like the television show, Cops.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Bad boy, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Yeah.
Fat cop jumps over a fence.
Bad cops. That's a Simpsons reference.
And you see, you can't pull these Simpsons references on me. Those are the yellow cartoon people, right?
That's them. what I will say, though, about in terms of things it discusses that I think is extremely topical, interesting, controversial, is its discussion of sex work.
Mm, sure.
We've not really talked about sex work in the podcast.
It's
one of the only social issues that I don't think... we've not done The Life, so...
Yeah, no, that's
or
fascinating.
Or Best Little Whorehouse, so...
I'm surprised we haven't. Well, all right, let's open that door.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, I think, like, as with a lot of social issues, tides are changing and people are thinking about things now.
Absolutely.
So I think even... from 14 years ago when this was written, people have different opinions about sex work and what that means. But certainly in London Road, I think its discussion is really interesting.
Yeah, it's very nuanced, which I like.
It's extremely nuanced. To me, that's what this show is about.
Yeah, sure.
Do you accept that?
I mean, this show is just about what it's verbatim. It's just what happened.
It is what it is. Yeah.
Right. And so I think it's hard to qualify exactly that. But there is this sense that the sex workers don't quite get their due.
No, like that to me, like that's the story that I care about in here. And I think it's really interesting hearing people who have seen the play.
Mm-hmm.
and seen the film.
Yeah.
And the differences they feel there, because I actually think they tell two different stories.
Interesting.
And yeah, when we talk about the two comparatively, yeah. I'll talk yeah. more about this. But sort of sex work in London Road, it comes up as an issue because Steve Wright only killed sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the residents and everyone have opinions about that.
Right.
And not really any of them are good.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
There is a chorus of those poor girls. And like,
well, so this is it. They are the only people that speak about it.
Yeah.
In a positive way are the sex workers themselves.
Yeah.
And it's not even in a positive way, but in a non stereotyped,
yeah.
non-judgmental,
yeah. way. In a way that doesn't like just categorize them and put them in a bucket.
Right. Exactly. To me, that is the most important song. We've All Stopped, it's called.
Yeah.
It's my favorite song in the piece. Mm-hmm. It's the most important song, in my opinion, because of the story that I think this tells.
Sure.
But I keep holding up the book. I realize no one can see me do this. I've got the play in my hand. You might be able to hear the pages.
It's a very sonic experience.
Yes. But that is the story that I'm kind of here for.
Yeah.
If I was ever directing this, that's the story that I would be telling.
Yeah.
Because you've got the world that you've got is this community, this neighborhood watch community.
Right.
And actually a part of this community are these sex workers, whether they like it or not.
Right.
They're still a part of this community. And where do they fit in?
Yeah.
Well, the answer is they don't.
Right.
And what are we going to do about that?
Yeah. And there is a reading of this play that like, oh man, this terrible thing happened around all of these people, but not really to them. They're just kind of upset about it in a
yeah.
you know, not in my backyard kind of way. And
very much so.
And they, you know, fix it by planting a bunch of flowers.
Yep.
And like there, and I do, you know, certainly didn't, I did not see the stage play, but the movie did give me a kind of like double pronged, bittersweet feeling about that, that on yeah. the one hand, you are happy for this community that they were able to, you know, come together, clean up their road, recover from the stress and the very real stress of these tragedies.
Yeah.
But also a like, what are you all celebrating kind of feeling at the end of it?
Exactly. It's like your work's not done,
pals.
Right.
Like,
yeah. And it's one of those things that, because the beauty of it being verbatim theater is they talk about that, you know. One of the lines that they say, in fact, the play opens with is, we've not had much trouble with the girls recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's thanks to the police, you know.
Right.
And it's so passive. It's not like, it's been great, the girls are working through, we've got them places in shelters or
right.
rehab clinics. Like, there's nothing like that. It's just like, the trouble's gone.
Yeah.
Like, we've not had much issue with them. It takes all of the humanity out of them.
Right.
And I think all the way through, all of the Neighborhood Watch Committee speak of them with any humanity, like without any humanity. Now, I mean, I've not lived in a community where there's a big sex work problem.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't know what it's like. And they do say that sometimes it would get threatened or propositioned or things
yeah.
like that. But these girls were losing their lives.
Right.
So
yeah.
really, well, where's your problem?
And it is, you know, they show the same community voices, both like being outraged and so angry at Stephen Wright and, you know, so upset about this terrible, terrible thing. But also, you know, there is a like, well, they deserved it sort of feeling
yeah.
that a lot of the characters have. And both of those at the same time, I don't know if that works.
It just doesn't work, because that's it. It's like, well, who are you angry about here?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Are you angry because someone committed a murder in your neighborhood? Or
right.
are you angry about who got murdered?
Right, yeah. And
do you know what I mean?
The great part about it is, because it's verbatim theater, that paradox is just true. And so
it's just true.
It just
exactly.
shines a light on it in a, you know, really interesting way.
I think the linchpin of it, and it is brilliant,
yeah.
the way that Alec has written it, and you know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
Is the very end.
Yes.
And just before we have the street party,
mm-hmm.
actually, just before we have the street party and the celebration of all the plants, we get a speech from Julie, who is in some ways your main character. That's she's Olivia Colman.
Yeah, she's as close as you could get to a protagonist. Yeah,
she's the events organizer in the committee. And she is a mother. You never see her husband. I don't know if she's a single mother or not. Hmm. Let me see if that's in the cast of characters. You never see your husband. Most of it is they're couples.
Okay, yeah.
It doesn't say. So maybe her husband didn't want to be interviewed or something. Mm-hmm. If she does have one. If not. Anyway, she is a mother. And she's quite vocal. She's the one who comes up with the whole idea of London Road and Bloom.
Yeah.
And getting everyone to sort out their gardens. And she's quite a prominent voice throughout the whole piece. And quite well-spoken and quite... You know what I mean? You listen to her and you're there for what she says. And... right at the end, she has this monologue. As we're calling it a monologue, but that's it's what it is.
Yeah.
Where she talks about the fact that if she could, she would shake him by the hand and say thanks.
Yeah.
For getting rid of these girls. And it's the most like disarming, jarring things that I've seen in theater. Like
It really is.
It's because it's real. I think that's it. It's because that's when you realize this isn't someone just writing a like, aha, here's your protagonist saying something bad.
And happily ever after. Yeah. But also, you know, clearly she has some, like her neighbors are much more friendly than they had ever been previously. Mm-hmm. There is this brand new coat of paint across the whole thing.
Absolutely.
She's got plenty to be grateful for. And it's because of the serial killer.
Yeah, and I don't. It's just that the battle that she picks is against the sex workers and not seeing them. Assuming just seeing them is a dirt presence on her street, and I think it's really good theatre is what it is.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It is exactly what theatre's about.
Yeah,
because it makes you feel an awful lot.
Right. Yeah,
well, and then you get to go and have the ending.
Right,
and it's really well done.
Right, and it does. You know, it is the reason. Like the question, why verbatim theatre? That's the answer. Is it showcases the complexity of life that we often simplify out?
Absolutely.
When we create art.
Because was she right to say that? No, but she still said it. And she says it herself, like, I shouldn't say that, like, that's a bad thing to say, but I still believe it. And absolutely, like, that is a completely normal human opinion.
Yeah.
She just had the courage to voice those thoughts.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just very interesting.
Fascinating.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah. Shall we talk about the film?
Yes.
Let's go. Whee!
That was cute.
It stretched over that remarkable six and a half weeks back in 2006 and over 10 days.
Four.
Now, he did say that he had sex with four of those women.
One.
Can you come to me?
Guilty.
Can you come to me?
Now we hear it's guilty on count one. That's Clara Martin. He has been found.
Can you come to me?
Killing Clara Martin. Clara was the first to go missing. That was October the 30th. Maybe even the early hours of the 31st.
Two.
Can you come to me?
Guilty.
Yes, we are getting the verdict through now.
He was caught on a
Steve Wright has been found
automatic
guilty of the
number plate
one.
Recognition camera.
Two.
He's also guilty of killing Anna Reynolds. So that's two guilty verdicts so far. There are five counts. So at the moment we know that he's guilty of the murder of Clara Martin.
Guilty.
Again, he's been found guilty of the murder of Emily Collingwood. The jury of nine and three women spent six and a half hours deliberating this verdict. They went out just after midday.
Two more counts to go.
We only have to hear the fifth count.
We only have to hear the fifth count. Now,
members of the jury will be telling the court
very close to Michelle Sears in the same area. Perhaps only
members of the jury will be telling. Members of the jury will be telling.
The jury will be telling the court now.
we know from one of the most disgusting serial killings in British history.
We're still awaiting news on Steve Wright's sentencing. It's thought Mr. Justice Gross will pass that first thing tomorrow morning. This is Kelly McCormack outside Ipswich Crown Court for Classic FM.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
So shockingly enough, the film was my introduction to this.
Yes, it's the only thing I've seen. It's hard. There are some still images of the stage production, yes, but not a lot out there.
You will not see it. I don't ever think you'll see it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It seems to be very popular with colleges in London to perform.
Yeah, you'll see amateur. Amateur productions, absolutely. But I don't think you'll see it in the National Theatre, which is a shame.
Yeah,
because it was a good
piece. Yeah.
No matter how many times I have emailed the National Theatre Archives saying I'm a librarian, saying I host this podcast, they will not relinquish that footage.
It's so under lock and key.
I'll keep working on it. I'll go down there one day and just be like, excuse me, could you please share with us? Thank you. Because I'm desperate to see it. But thankfully, Rufus Norris decided to make a film.
Mm-hmm.
And a
brilliant adaptation piece of musical theater film. It's so good.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it does all the things right. Even down to the choreography and the staging, like things you wouldn't think that this piece needs choreography, but it's there.
Do you know it won an award? It won an award for its choreography.
Really? Good. Yep. I'm glad.
Over other musicals.
Yeah.
I think that's hilarious.
That's awesome. Cause
how do you choreograph this musical?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
But the answer is you just do it, right? The answer is the choreography then becomes such a bigger artistic piece as opposed to a dance break because all the art you're putting on top of this thing, you know, smells more like art than in a normal musical. So you get to kind of, I imagine if you can get your mindset around that sort of perspective is very liberating as a choreographer, as an artist.
I think so, yeah. I would love to like even see it now just because I think, again, even in sort of 20 or I guess 10 years, but in that 10 years I've had a lot, like I'd love to see like Stephen Hoggett's treatment of it. He was the guy who did Curious Incident and Harry Potter.
Sure.
Just a really good naturalistic choreographer.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see his treatment of it.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be really good. But yeah, it's as a film.
Yeah.
And I don't have any because good luck getting the cast recording from the play for this.
Yeah.
Right?
It's hard to find.
Let alone seeing it. But the film soundtrack is there and the film is there for you. And I am more than happy to say to people, use that as your introduction to this musical.
Absolutely.
Because it is an incredible adaptation.
Yeah. I have no doubt that the stage production was great, but I wonder if it feels. I bet you the stage production is fantastic. I bet you the film. I would wager that the film is a better, pinprick on the timeline of musical theater for this musical.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, first of all, because it will allow many, many, many more people to see it.
Right.
But yeah, I think it handles the story of London Road better than the original play.
Because it has that interviewing nature. It kind of takes away what might be an unnecessary layer of art that the live theater has added on top of this thing, because it's already got so many, you know, different pieces of textile woven through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Plus, then it's live theater pretending to be interviews, but actually the interviews pretending to be on camera, and you get to abstract so much of that away.
Yeah.
Once you're filming the thing, once you can actually have a camera and cut from the over-the-shoulder, see the cameraman, see the newscaster, to the shot of the newscaster, to the television, to the people watching the television, to the people singing the thing at the television. It's just so much simpler to do all that on film.
on film. Exactly. And also, I think one of the key differences are the film isn't multi-roled.
Yes.
Everyone is their own person.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps. It's interesting. Like, I want to just talk a little bit about alienation.
Okay.
Because I think that is like a really key part of verbatim theatre.
Yes.
Right? That alienation effect. I think you need it because it is, it's not a story.
Yeah.
It's, do you know what I mean?
It's facts. It's literally Brecht's metaphor for the alienation effect. Mm-hmm. Is you saw a car crash, you ran to someone else and described the car crash. Like, that is exactly what this show is. Not in a exactly. metaphor. It is, yeah. you know, you saw.
And it is yeah. primary source.
Yeah.
Like, it's as pure as you can get. So I think, obviously, in a theatre house, you have a lot of tools to do that. And obviously, multi-rolling it is one of them. And even just the whole stripped back nature of the set, mm-hmm. everything is pulled away. I think it's interesting that the film obviously can't do that because it's a film.
They could have made a stylistic choice that way. Could, you know, take something like the movie version of Chicago.
But even then, Chicago's still so immersive. Like,
sure,
its conceit is so
right
ingrained in what it is.
In
I
its
don't
style.
Think it feels
yeah.
like. But even yeah, I think like just the fact that you're putting something on film mm-hmm. instantly takes away the alienation thing that you can get from theater because they're no yeah. longer real people.
Right.
It's Olivia Colman. Do you know right. what I mean? It's yeah. characters.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's to the detriment of the show. I still think you get the story,
yeah.
if not more so. And I've really tried to think about how they've managed that.
Yeah. I mean, they have a bunch of tricks. I forget what song it is, but it's where she sits in that chair and everything moves out around her.
10 weeks, yeah.
Yeah. They do a ton of other things to take advantage of the media.
For sure. I think, like, even just the opening.
Yes.
The opening is genius.
It's so...
so the opening...
It's so brilliant.
Isn't in the play. Mm-hmm. If that's your favorite number and you see a production of it, you're going to be disappointed. I'm sorry. Basically, the way the opening works, if you've not seen the film, please, please watch it. Like, please. But the opening is just various news reports reporting on these crimes that are happening.
Yep.
From the early stage. Now that's in comparison to the play, which opens up at the first committee meeting, or
yeah,
the first
which
AGM.
Which
is about halfway through the film, yeah. And then kind of in the narrative of the play, mm-hmm. you know, if we're doing this in chronological order,
right,
it would be about halfway through the story.
Right.
Maybe just a wee bit after.
Yeah.
But that's how they start. And then they talk about London Road in Bloom and the gardens, and
yep.
that's how the show is introduced. And then they kind of peel it back in time to talk about, well, this is why we're doing this.
Right. Here's let us tell you the story. Not as explicitly, but that's the structure they're mirroring.
Yeah. Whereas the film is told chronologically.
Yeah.
And I don't know, to me it makes more sense.
Yeah. I also don't know if it would have worked on stage. Because there is on stage seeing them as a united community at the beginning feels more important in the context of stage creation, because mm-hmm. then you kind of know where we're going. Whereas I
yeah.
think audiences have a little more patience being thrown into a film and being confused for a second. Confused is
yeah.
the wrong word, but like not having all the answers. And for the film, then, it makes it so much more powerful when they do unite as a community, when they do start meeting each other. Whereas if you were watching it on stage, I imagine it would become a little trying to watch these individual people who are so nonspecific, you don't even know their name or if they are a different person, if you
yeah.
don't know the future purpose. So
yeah, that's true.
I think both suit their medium well.
Uh-huh. And I think as well, like, if you're going to see London Road in a theater, you know what you're getting into.
Sure.
Whereas I think with the film, people will be watching it because Olivia Colman and Tom Hardy are in
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they might be watching because it's a musical and they're into that.
Right.
They might not be aware of what it actually is, because I think the film sets up this is going to be weird,
right,
in a much better way, in inverted commas, than the play, because the play throws you right in the deep end.
Right.
It's that frog in the boiling water.
Yes.
Is it a frog? Right? Analogy.
I think it's frog. Yeah.
The film very much just flings that frog in and it hops right out.
Yep.
I can see that happening. If people just being like, this is weird, I'm not here for this. But they're in the National Theatre, so they're open to being a bit wanky.
Well, and they close the doors and turn the lights off, and it would be weird if you left.
Right. Whereas with the film, the water heats very, very gently around you.
Even it's so tiny. Even letting you know that it's a musical takes a second.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
It's just a news report.
Yeah.
To start with. And even because they have some embedded text at the start where it says this is their story exactly as they told it. They don't say this is a musical.
Right.
At no point. Because I do imagine, knowing our world, people would switch it off the second they see that M word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the way that they set it up with the news reports. It's something we're so used to watching the news, and here, we can hear that musicality.
Yeah, and they start to hint it a little bit. They start to lean in just a bit more to vocalizing the music behind it. Yeah. But to the point where you're like, are they singing? Is that what?
Exactly. You're like, oh, I can. Oh, that's quite fun. And then because you don't know, is that what the whole thing is going to be? Just little da 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 da, like GLaDOS.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or is it going to be full number? Well, it will be full number.
Yeah.
But I think even the concept of them taking news reporters, because news reporters have such a specific cadence to their voice anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's literally in their training of talking about a report.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
We're so used to that cadence of speech, that musicality, that when we hear it with music, it instantly makes sense.
Yeah. Yep.
For us. So we're familiar and we're ready, and then they can launch you into it. And then you're just like, hang on, this is great.
Right.
Because this works.
Yeah, but they let you in with something that was familiar and that you could attach to. I mean, I think that's why it is that kind of accident of the news reporting motif being so applicable to this verbatim musicality that it made this thing popular and successful.
Totally. Totally. It's a brilliant introduction, such a smart change.
Well,
just bravo whoever's idea that was, because they did it so well. And I think, again, that's that idea of they got it so right for the first time of it being a thing.
Yeah.
The first verbatim movie.
I think that is that's the wrong way to phrase it, though. This is, because it is the first thing, it is right. It's successful because it was a new idea, and then the new idea is kind of self-defining its category.
But then I don't know, because there's been a lot of good ideas that are just good ideas, but they don't necessarily pay off.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Whereas this, I think, is a good idea that pays off.
Yeah, fair.
You know, because I think if I attempted this,
right,
I could have this great idea. I was like, do you know what would really work? Is if we musicalize speech.
Sure.
It would not be good, Tommy. I'll tell you that much. It would be decent.
Yeah.
But it would not be.
But it is.
To the extent
it is. It's a chicken and egg discussion of, art and genre.
Yeah. But I feel like one of my biggest bugbears is when creators don't look at the full thing. Don't look at the event. Don't look at the pitfalls.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's me as an overthinker.
Yeah, sure.
I do that all the time. But to the detriment of my art, because I don't create things, because I'm like, it's not going to work.
You
this
start
is going to fail.
Yeah.
Da, da, da.
Yeah, I feel that.
Whereas I feel like Adam Quark looked at all of the eventualities and just corrected them as he went on. And it was just very intelligent about it.
Yeah.
Because it just works.
Yeah.
I mean, there's loads of differences between the two in terms of the structure and numbers. I think if you can get a hold of the National Theatre recording, key ones to look up on that are Shaving Scratch.
I don't remember that one. I only made it through that one twice.
Shaving Scratch is Tom Hardy's number.
Oh, is that when he comes home bloody and they're talking about it in the pub?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. So the whole setting of the numbers is different. In the play, where it's called Shaving Scratch, it's a group of three guys sat at a table just having kind of lad chats.
Yeah.
About the murders, and this one guy is like an expert on serial killers, mm-hmm. and has been studying them since his mid-teens, but it doesn't mean he's what he is one.
Right.
But anyway, in that pub setting, it's him and his friends, and they are kind of it's a slightly sort of eerier number, mm-hmm. backed by the eerie Silent Night chorus as well, where they're kind of presenting this idea of like, could this be us showing you the villain? Like, is right. this kind of, is it a whodunit story?
Yeah.
And his friends talk about one time he came into the pub and he had blood pouring out his face. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, it was a shaving scratch. And that's all it is.
Right.
But they have this idea of like, well, we could turn you in. But, you know, it's £500,000 that we would be getting if we turned you, you know, yeah. what I mean, turned you into the police. And just this other aspect of it. Whereas in the film, it's Tom Hardy in a taxi.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only one where I'm like...
yeah, why didn't you...
You could have kept it original. Yeah, yeah, you could have kept it the original.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's still good in the film because it's a conversation.
Yes.
It's not just a Tom Hardy monologue. Which
exactly.
Which is, I think, yeah. a risk that they easily could have run.
Yeah. And it still serves the same purpose. But I would agree with you, I think, less effectively of like toying with the audience a bit, being like, ooh, is it this one?
Yeah.
Is it yeah. this guy?
Because that's the thing. I think, particularly with the chronological presentation of it, you could easily be led into thinking, is this going to be a whodunit?
Right.
And, through like It Could Be Him and through
oh, yeah.
Tom Hardy's song, that is the kind of story that they're presenting to you,
right?
But then when and that's when it all started, mm-hmm. happens, you realize actually this is a song, this is a show about this community, it's these
right.
people and their lives, and it has this shift, and I just love that. It's great storytelling.
Yeah, it is really engaging and it's suspenseful. It's, you
it,
know.
It absolutely is. It reminds me a lot. Have you listened to S-Town?
Yes, I have. It does have
right.
that feel. Yeah.
Because in a very similar way to this.
Yeah. S-Town is the true crime podcast from the makers of Serial.
Yes. But it's true crime in inverted commas because it starts out
yeah.
as true crime.
Yeah.
You know, so, like this guy writes into
yeah.
this American life
yeah.
and he's like, something's going down in my thing. There's been this murder that's been covered up. And you sound like, oh my God, great. It's going to be Serial Part 2.
Right.
And the archivist, the interviewer, goes out to this community, befriends this man, and it ends up becoming this chronicling of this
yeah.
guy's just interesting life. And it's a beautiful piece because
yeah.
at no point at the start when you were listening to it, you were ready because you wanted the next Adnan Syed.
Right.
But what you're gifted
yeah.
is this beautiful, interesting life,
yeah.
this tragic life of this guy.
Yeah.
Again, I thoroughly recommend
yeah.
anyone listen to that. But I think in the same way with London Road.
We have to find the long German word for that thing. Like, because like S-Town has it, London Road has it, Tiger King has it. Like,
uh-huh.
this like real life storytelling capability to
yeah.
take the facts and present them to you in a way that is entirely real, or at least real enough that it's convincing,
mm-hmm.
but in the right order. It's, I guess it is just storytelling. I just want a longer,
it's
more
just
complicated
that's
German
the thing,
word.
Is it, yeah, it is storytelling, but it's real.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
I mean, it's not stories. There's no fancy.
It's like story it's resetting. Just, it's like reality setting, something like
yeah,
that, you know?
Yeah, frame, like... There probably is a...
There probably is a long German word, right?
Yeah, the linguists out there will probably be able to tell us. But no, it's definitely a thing that all of these pieces take advantage of. And it is. It hooks you in with this, like, we all love true crime, don't
right.
we? Oh, ho, ho, who's it going to be?
Yeah.
Where are you going to find out? Where's the twist? No, actually, this is a play about a community and you know, fall in love with it. But again, with the film, the, I don't know, just certain things are just a bit more poignant, I feel. And I think it came from Alecky changing her mind about how religiously she sticks to the text.
Yes.
One of, again, one of my favourite numbers, but I've said that about six of the numbers somewhere. Oops. Is 10 weeks that we spoke about. That's the one where the furniture has been taken away. In the play, it's set in a bingo hall.
Interesting.
And the tempo is shifted up significantly. Yeah. Well, not significantly, but like a good enough amount. I don't like it.
Yeah, interesting.
I don't like it at all. Because it's disarming. It's slightly comedic.
Yeah.
Because it starts off pink 189, everyone goes, ow, because it's the bingo.
Right.
Do you have bingo?
We do, but we don't call it pink. We'll call it, it's B-I-G-N or O.
Okay.
But yes. They're in, and so one through, anyway, this is not interesting podcasting. Cool. Yes. We describe the rules of bingo.
But yeah, so they get, ow, is it, we're really upset, and it sounds a bit more like, oh, well, I just want to, but I'm a bit more.
Right. I'm upset that I got my bingo. I didn't get my number on my bingo card.
Right. Whereas in the film,
it's heartbreaking.
It's heart. Like, I can't help but cry every single time I listen to it, because it's just that, like, it's so real. It's so emotional. It's so heartbreaking, so honest.
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful. And again, one of the things that the film, just to keep pushing the greatness of this film, is the orchestration.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
So the curse of the theatre, right? This is why I don't like theatre.
This is why.
Right? The orchestration of the play was percussion, guitar, bass, three woodwind, and keyboards.
Oh, wow.
And that's it. Right, and you can tell.
Yeah.
Whereas the film has been fully scored.
Yeah, they've got a cinematic orchestra.
Yeah, and my goodness, does it benefit from it?
Yeah,
because again, just the storytelling that you can tell with that music of just adding strings into a number like 10 weeks changes the whole atmosphere.
Sure.
And it stops. This is. I kind of go back to what you said earlier about it. Is it a musical?
Yeah.
I think people could argue going into seeing it in the National where they could say, no, it was a play.
Yeah, or an art because piece.
Because of all these different like alienation things. And
right.
I think the Pink 189 of 10 weeks is one of those things where it's like, you're not going to get too engrossed because listen to what we're talking about in this song.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas in the film, you're there with that character.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This is just a moment in her life. And it's just so much more poignant. And to me, it's better musical theater.
Yeah. Huh. I can't think of any other time when that's happened. When the movie's better.
The movie's like gotten it so much. Yeah. Like the movie's just improved upon.
Reefer Madness does that.
I've not seen the film of Reefer Madness.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay.
We'll do that one of these days.
Oh, we will.
Yeah, that I think that I don't want to join that cabal of people like, oh, the movie sucks, because I think the movies certainly have merit.
Oh my God. The thing is, a lot of the time it's its own thing. That's what I always say with movie adaptations. Even things like Les Mis, it's its own thing. It's like it's a revival.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's all it is.
Yeah.
They've just done it a bit differently.
Yeah.
I think to drastically improve, I really think they have, and that's the thing is like I really implore many people to watch the film, because I actually think it's more accessible,
sure.
Do you know what I mean? Than anything else, what I kind of talked about earlier with the sex work aspect and how they retell that story, I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It's the same text.
Yeah.
They tell a different story.
Well, I do think you're right that then it was probably Alecky getting a little more comfortable with changing her things, because 10 weeks, only one of those was the real thing. either the bingo hall or moving out in the chair. They both can't have been verbatim.
Yeah.
In the strictest sense.
Completely. And I imagine it was the bingo. Like, I don't doubt that. And
right.
That's quite a key part of a lot of her plays, is that she takes the environment and she works that in, because it's a lot of the time so crucial.
Sure.
She actually weirdly has, there's another play that she has called The Girlfriend Experience.
Okay.
And it's in a brothel.
Hmm.
And it's just like set in the one room, in the front room of this brothel. I think it's like three or four of the women that work there. And it's them talking about their lives, basically.
Hmm.
And it's not specifically like focused on the gentleman that they're with,
sure,
or that they see. It is talking a lot about like how that impacts their relationships and what are their aspirations and, you know, what are they doing. But a part of that play is one of the days when she went to interview them, they were setting up, I think it was like a rowing machine, and that just had to become part of the play,
right?
Because that's what they were talking about, and that's what. And she had this weird compulsion, because, not compulsion, this weird thing, where, conflict, that's what the word is. She had this weird conflict where she wanted to help the person.
Huh.
But the second she helps the person, she's bringing herself into the play.
Right. And it is that quantum discussion.
Uh-huh. And so she found, because she started off because she was just like, I would just be so rude to just sit here and watch someone struggle making this thing. So she started off, and then she realized it was impacting all of the conversations, her being involved in it.
Yeah.
So she took a step back and just was like, I'm sorry, I need to watch you struggle. and let the conversation just happen with her being on the outside.
Yeah.
Totally, totally fascinating.
Yeah.
But yeah, that idea of the environment playing such a big factor.
Well, and even, you know, that shifting of the creation point, because she had the canny thought in that moment to be like, this is part of the story. This is part of the story that I'm going to create.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, the reshuffling of that timeline is so interesting. It wasn't on the page. It wasn't on note cards on a bulletin board. It was while experiencing this thing in real life and deciding what to pay attention to, what to not interact with, like all that.
Yep.
It's cool.
Yep. But yeah, the kind of the gift of the film, and what it allows you to have compared to the play, is that, to me, I think the film puts the sex workers, it constantly reminds you that they're there.
Yeah.
And that they're not being helped.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're not being supported. And when they get their number, they become the main characters almost. Yeah.
Well, and even at the end, because you follow one of them through this like big party.
Yeah, absolutely do.
With, you know, and they don't make you, you know, they don't make you feel any particular thing about it. They just let you feel about it, which is so
exactly
delightful.
Because I think there's two big interpretations at the end there. So, what happens again, if you've not seen it, is a little girl kind of separates herself from the street party, and goes over to one of the sex workers who's just been watching from the distance and gives her a balloon.
Yeah.
She lets the balloon go, and it's just the classic pan to the sky.
Right.
I've seen some reviews saying that that's just really twee, and it's just like a really obvious, sob story thing.
Yeah.
But I'm actually like, to be honest, I don't know if it is, because I think if people were on Team Community, they could see that as, oh, well, isn't that nice? At the end, the little girl is welcoming her into the community.
Right.
Right. But if you're on Team Sex Work, it's like, she can't feel a part of this community.
Right.
Because it takes this person who doesn't have any idea of who she is to physically interact with her. And it's such a passing thing that doesn't, you know what I mean? That doesn't mean anything. There's the problem hasn't been solved at all. They're still there. They still need help. To me, I'm like, that's really smart.
Yeah.
Because I think there's completely two different ways to take that.
It's so delightful. Go watch the film.
Please, please watch the film. Like, please talk about this show to people. Like, it's really important.
Yeah.
Like, in our musical theater history that we keep banging on about.
Sure.
This is an important moment.
It is. Well, and I, you know, I trade in this stuff and I knew nothing about this till you told me about it.
It's just, which yeah. And I think a lot of people have been in a similar boat, particularly across the pond. Mm-hmm. Because we've, you know, I mean, I think obviously because it was a BFI film and Olivia Colman was in sure. it and she's ours.
Yeah.
People will be slightly more aware of it. But again, musical theatre is a different kettle right. of fish over here. So
yeah.
they won't be harking on about how, oh my God, this is so significant in the
right.
canon of musical theatre. But you can, America.
You so. Can. You can indeed.
Yep. So please track this down, signed off about it. Just write the next one.
Yeah.
It works. Do you know what I mean?
Although I guess to write the next one, you have to find some other terrible crime that has happened and then dramatize it.
It doesn't need to be a terrible crime. It can be three women chatting in a brothel.
Fair. Fair.
I'd watch that. Do you know what I mean? It can be a pandemic. Do you know what I mean? Where people on the outside of it come back and rebuild their lives.
I wouldn't watch that.
Maybe not now, but in 14 years' time.
Fair. Fair.
Do you know what I mean? I just think it's, yeah, I really implore every single person who listens to this podcast to take this in. Please do. Because I love it so much. I love the show so much. I didn't say it that much, actually.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Also, we didn't talk about the fact that It Could Be Him is one of the biggest bangers.
Oh, it's such a bop. It's great.
It's like banger.
Yeah.
No, how'd you get a banger in a musical?
It's so good, especially musical.
They did it
like
way
this.
Before Sex. Just saying. Senate, mic drop.
Gave us an extra point for having basil on the windowsill, didn't you?
Yeah. Hanging baskets.
Rhubarb.
Variegated
ivy. Your fashion margaritas.
Yeah, which makes a nice show.
The roses.
And then you've got
done really well.
This year.
Yeah.
The days.
Whatever they
I've got the nearly 17 hanging baskets.
Pretty well.
On the windowsill. Yeah. Leave it or not. Once again. Gave us an extra point for having
London Road.
I feel like we walked down it and back several times.
We absolutely did. Oh, there's so much more I could talk about.
Tune in for part two. No.
but hey, enough of London Road, Tommy. What's next?
I got a quiz question. You ready?
I'm so ready.
Despite being the brainchild of British authors, this show prominently features the American spelling of a word in order to match a trademark. What show?
You Americans.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, if you would like to get in touch with us, please do. You can over on Twitter or Instagram. Our handle is @JimAndTomic. Or if you want to go ham about London Road, I'm sitting ready in my email inbox. Drop us an email over at our website, JimAndTomic.com.
And while you're there, you can check out our Patreon if you want to financially support the show. Thank you, as always, to all of our current Patreons. We adore you deeply. And like most podcasts, reviews on Apple Podcasts and other podcatchers always help us out.
Yes, indeed. But please just go tell your friends all about this show. And I don't mean London Road, do that as well. But yes, word of mouth is the best way for us to grow as a big old family.
That's all we got. Thanks for listening, everyone. Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps.
A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Sploosh. Sploosh.
Get out of here.
I will not. That's a great reference. Is that what he does? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, okay. The Wind Waker.
Oh, it is. If you went, then I would know what you meant.
Kaboo! Anyway.